Welcome to Life in the Balance. I'm Aaron Henkin. This is a monthly feature here on WYPR where we focus on tough issues here in our city. We talk with people who've actually experienced these issues, the lives that hang in the balance, you might say. And then we talk to those people in our city who are proactively working to do something about these entrenched problems. We've covered everything from post-incarceration employment struggles to gang violence to grandparents raising grandchildren to teenage depression to the opioid crisis. You can listen to previous episodes of the show at wypr.org/lifeinthebalance or wherever you download your podcasts. On this episode, we're going to be taking you inside a boxing gym in East Baltimore. This gym is unique. It's one of the only places in the neighborhood that offers any extracurricular activity for local kids. And it was founded by a man named Alex Long. Alex had a difficult childhood himself, being separated from siblings and parents in foster care. And he's faced even more challenges since then, including the recent murder of his sister. But what he does to stay stable and positive is he remembers the support of his coaches. He was always an athletic guy. He received incredible support through sports and coaching throughout his life. And he wants to make sure the boys in his neighborhood get the same kind of care and guidance. Alex is now an active member of Safe Streets. That's an anti-violence prevention program here in Baltimore. And with the help of manager Gardnell Carter, also known as Brother Hamza, he was able to move into an empty space and slowly start filling it with boxing equipment for his students. We're going to hear more about Alex and his journey later on in the program, but for now, we're going to head inside the Team Redemption Boxing Gym in East Baltimore.
We have our reflex ball right here that helped the kids, you know, work on their fighting stance and just dodging punches, being able to counter. We have our heavy bags in the back that we really use pretty much nonstop. That's where they really get most of their work. Outside, we really don't do no contact at this current moment. So all the beating and banging is on those bags right there. We got our curl bars, you know, the sit-up bench, our ab rocker. Like I say, a lot of things we really haven't set up yet because we just moved into this location. We're really setting things up and figuring out where we're going to set things up at.
His hands is down. He lazy punching. Knees not bent. Not turn his back foot. This is what you call pull technique.
This young man right here is Joshua Walker, the heart of the program. Me and the kids, we started this, but like I told y'all, he is the actual skill set. He is the reason why this program has been able to strive and for me to be able to actually teach them something other than just throwing their hands.
My name is Joshua Walker. I've been boxing since I was 7 years old. I'm 21 now. I was a troubled youth in my neighborhood and my community and stuff. I had a lot of run-ins with the law. I got into a lot of guys in my neighborhood. I set a bad name for myself. I thought, you know, being make people scared of me, you know, is what a man was. It wasn't. And Alex like a big brother to me, you know. Alex, whenever I'm doing something wrong or they feel as though, you know, something that I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do, Alex and Brother Hamza right there telling me, you know, nah, you know, this not the right way, you know. You need to do this better, you need to do that, you know. They've been a real positive impact in my life. And Alex had kids, you know, that he was just trying to do stuff with every day. And actually two of his sons actually brought up the idea about boxing. And I was talking to them about, you know, with my boxing experience and stuff. And Alex was like, well, man, we can do something, you know. Anybody can have talent to do anything, you know. You can have talent to run fast, you have a talent to, you know, to be, you know, to swing punches fast or be real strong. But discipline comes with the mind, well, within yourself. Discipline is on, you know, what type of character you are. How do you carry yourself? How do you go about things in a different way, a better way? And I feel as though that my discipline that I have now is beyond what I've had, I'm going to say, at least 2 years ago. I feel as though that I'm more mature, and my discipline level is, you know, it got me more on a better track and a better state of mind, because the discipline that I had first, what I thought was a good discipline was anybody who came to me or stepped in front of me, I can beat them up, or I can just manhandle them and just keep going about my way, you know. discipline is what you have self-control. If somebody call you out your name, you know, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to put your hands on them. You know, it's a better way of going about things. And I feel as though the Alex and Brother Hamilton moved me into having better discipline.
Well, when we first come in, we get all the guys to sit down and just have a little 5-minute period of just kind of like meditation, where they just sit back and just get to clear their mind and just get to focus even two things, either all the bad things that happened today and what they can do to alleviate that and make that, you know, change for the better, or where do they see themselves? Because a lot of times, speaking from my personal experience, I didn't have, you know, too much faith and belief in myself. Because I was always, you know, kind of beat down and told what I couldn't do and what I wasn't going to be able to become. So when you actually get to visualize yourself being whoever you want to be, I think that really can help any child 100 times better than anything that I or their parents can say, because it's what they want for themselves.
My name is Cameron Tartman, and 13, and I go to Fort Warren Trinity Elementary Middle.
My name is Martre Wheat. I'm 13. And I go to Fort Worth in middle school.
My name is Khalil. I'm 13. I go to Fort Worth to elementary middle school. Yeah.
My name is Robert, and I go to Fort Worth. I'm 9 years old.
And how about Alex? Talk about Mr. Alex and just sort of the kind of guy he is, and just sort of what it's like to spend time with him.
Well, what it's like to spend time with him, like, he makes sure you good and everything, and like he teaches discipline. Make sure we ain't doing nothing wrong, and we gotta do the consequences. He a nice guy. He tell us don't keep them guns down, stay out the streets really, stay out of trouble, and don't be doing things to get yourself locked up, or don't be having BB guns or nothing like that.
He's a nice man, and I'm happy that he opened this boxing place so we can get strong.
My name is Joshua, and I'm 11.
My name is O'Hara, 16 years old.
Okay, my name is Octavia Stevens, and O'Hara Stevens and Joshua Ross are my sons. My sons, they are the ones that kind of came up with the whole idea with their friends on what it is they want to do in the community, something that, everybody that can do. So I'm gonna support them regardless, not only because they're my sons and their friends, but just because I feel as though that the kids don't have rec centers anymore. They don't have outlets for when they get angry or upset with things that they gotta deal with. You know, a lot of people think that just cause they kids, they don't feel or they don't have, you know, emotions and things like that, but they little people to me too. They're going to be our age if we keep leading them down the same, you know, path to doing good. So I feel as though that all kids need that outlet.
This is called the body workout. It's called body hunting. This is helping you to place your punches right, to keep moving, and always looking for target when it comes to the body, okay? But while Alex have O'Hara on the body bag, we're gonna still have the kids working on the heavy bag. So everybody is always working at all times.
So you got Alex putting on like a padded chest plate here. He's gonna get punched for a while. Is that what's about to happen?
They ready to take blows at Alex's body to work on the technique for punching to the body and how it feel to strike to the body.
So tell me about this apparatus that you're putting on yourself. You're getting ready to get punched by a pretty big 16-year-old.
Yeah, this Venom body gear really give us the opportunity to let the kids unload and not really cause damage to each other. So I prefer that I wear it or Josh wear it, and it really get them the confidence. I'm a grown man, 230 pounds, so you can bring it to me, O'Hara, at 140, 150 pounds. It's not going to be an issue with people in your weight class. So this, like I say, this really just give them an opportunity to build their confidence, just get used to getting contact in.
So you got this vest on, you're going to dodge around, and O'Hara's going to take his best shots at you.
Definitely.
Okay, go for it.
You ready? Don't try to hurt me, boy.
Come on, you got to move. I ain't going to be standing there.
Well, this is what you call like a... What we call it used to be a string on the ball, but it's not a string. We got it on the pole. Come here, Josh. Come in. Hustle. This is when you're hitting it, right? And it moves. It's like a hit. It's in the ring and moves. So, Josh, I want you to go 1-2 up top. Keep it going. Embracing your accuracy and placing your punches.
Team Redemption Boxing Gym in East Baltimore, a place where kids are strengthening their minds and bodies, all thanks to the dedication of Alex Long. You're listening to Life in the Balance. I'm Aaron Henkin, and after the break, we're going to learn how Alex overcame some incredible challenges to become a community activist and a mentor to dozens of kids in his neighborhood. Stay with us. Tune to 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station, where you can hear Life in the Balance on the first Wednesday of every month at 1 p.m. and again at 9 p.m. You can also check out past episodes of this show on your own schedule when you subscribe to the Life in the Balance podcast. You can find it at wypr.org/podcastcentral. That's also where you can find some great new homegrown WYPR programs available exclusively as podcasts. The Noir and Bizarre is a podcast about occult history, ghosts, haunted houses, and secret crimes, with a special emphasis on stories that draw on the rich history and culture of Baltimore. And Knock Knock, Who's There? Is a curiosity-driven podcast about opening doors and finding out who or what is behind them. Check out WYPR's menu of podcast offerings at wypr.org/podcastcentral. I'm Aaron Henkin. Welcome back to Life in the Balance. On this episode, we've been learning all about the Team Redemption Boxing Gym in East Baltimore. It's a place founded by local community activist Alex Long. The gym acts as a safe haven for kids in the area, an area with very limited options when it comes to extracurricular activities. But this gym is also a bit of a miracle. Alex's life hasn't been an easy one, and he brings to this project a personal understanding of all the challenges that youth in his neighborhood face. Working with Safe Streets, an anti-violence prevention program here in Baltimore, has given Alex the connections that allowed him to open the gym, and he's currently an Open Society Institute Fellow, which means he's getting funding and nonprofit management resources to ensure that the gym is a success. We got the chance to chat with him a bit more about his life, his motivations, and how this all got started.
My name is Alexander Long. I'm a violence interrupter for Safe Streets. I somewhat feel like I turned out to be a productive citizen. You know, I'm still working and still trying, and I face my battles, but at the end of the day, I don't see anybody in our kids' is really motivating them and keeping them from doing the things that have destroyed their life. I see tons of people telling them all the things to destroy their life. You know, do this, do all the things that don't benefit them, their families, or anybody. So that's what, like I say, that I just wanted to give something that I noticed wasn't being given and wasn't being offered. And that, and like I say, that once again is opportunity, man. We have to stop taking away from our kids. And that's the one thing that I see across the board everywhere. They put on a back burner. Emotionally, physically, it almost doesn't matter. You know, and that's a hard pill to swallow. I know me as a young man, when I was growing up, when I was ignored, that's what caused me to rebel and do some of the wildest things I was doing. So when I see kids that's just constantly being ignored, I can understand why we see what we see today in these streets.
Do you have a story of like an Alex in your life when you were young, a mentor who kind of came in and stepped in when it maybe wasn't necessary for them to do so and made a change for you?
It wouldn't be necessarily one person. It could start with my football coach, Coach Hot, when I was at Whitlawn High School, Coach Reggie White when I was at Whitlawn High School, Coach Haskins. Like I said, I had a lot of coaches that was always Pastor Jones, who was my foster uncle, who 24/7, I don't care what I did, man, he let me know that it was something better out there for me, even when I did the good things. Like, usually that's when you think somebody just let you slide. He still like, man, you know you can still be doing a whole lot. So he always let me know that it was a better me out there, you know. So it wasn't necessarily one individual. Like I say, it was like that village thing. So, like I say, I just wanted to play my part and just give back to my community the best I can. That's the only way I really knew how. I didn't have no money or, you know, big house or nothing like that. The only thing I had was just me and what I could do for you.
You got together some equipment. You got this space. Tell me the story of, like, how you started spreading the word and how you got kids into the idea of coming here.
Once again, the credit go to my kids. I printed up flyers, I believe once or twice, and both times I printed up like 50 copies. I passed them out on my routine while I'm out on safe streets, just passing out flyers about the community and what we offering and what we're doing, and that's just one of the things. We got this boxing program that we're running now. But mainly it was the kids going to school bragging about them boxing. And then their homeboy be like, oh, where you box at? And, oh, I box up safe street. So it really been the kids that truly helped this program have success and take off like it has. I can't take no credit and say I did anything, you know, special or spectacular. It been the kids going out there just telling the work that they've been putting out there.
Tell me the story of the first day you opened the doors in this place. I mean, what was that day like?
Dreadful. I can really say that. Because it wasn't to nobody's expectation. I assumed that it'd just be like, you know, me and my sons. But I really just thought it was going to be us. And my first day, I had 12 kids, and it was chaotic because I wasn't expecting to really be able to give orders to 12 kids and had them sit there and listen and try to take them. So I kind of dreaded it because it was a lot of hard work. The kids was mad because it wasn't what they just naturally assumed that they was just going to get gloves, mouthpiece, and just go beat each other up. They did not expect for it to be cardio. They did not expect for it to be sit down. And like when we start in our group, we start out with a circle and kids take 5 minutes to just sit back and just evaluate how their day went. You know, good, the bad, you know, what you think you could have did better, things like that, just had that self-reflection time. So they wasn't expecting that, nor did I don't think they wanted no parts of that. So, like I say, it was dreadful for everybody, but it was fun, too, because they really got to see what it really meant to box and got to see that it's not all about fighting and beating people up. Like, it's really about a lifestyle change that you have to make. And before you even fight anybody, you have to respect that person as a fighter, because if you don't, 9 times out of 10, you can go get knocked out. You know, so that's the one thing we really try to teach and spread is just to respect the people.
And I guess, I mean, boxing has got to be such a pressure release valve because you do get to be aggressive. You do get to have this ritualized combat. But I guess at the end of a boxing match, someone gets up after 10 seconds as opposed to the alternative.
Exactly, and that's the one thing that I tell parents all the time. Would you much rather your kid go out here, get in a fight with one of his friends, and come home and be able to sit down and tell you how he got in a fight with one of his friends, why he got in a fight, and what he can probably do to prevent things like that? Or would you rather somebody come banging on your door and tell you that your son homeboy shot him in his head because they was beefing over a dice game. You know, so at some point, we're going to have to choose what's more important. And to me, and it's not about the program that I run, and this is why I kind of started my program, because it really get back to installing manhood into people, because it's a lot of cowardness going on in these streets that nobody speaks on. You know, so to me, this is a way to eliminate that, because you have to prove, unlike the streets, so you can just talk and you can be flashy in the streets. It's all about the show. This is all about the proof. You want to show that you're the best, you got to prove that you're the best. You got to actually go out here, and if you got to beat them, if you got to outwork them, you're going to have to do that. You know, it's not about what you say or how you look. You can come in here color coordinated, matching shoes, you know, wristband, headband, and you gonna get mopped. It don't mean anything. You know, so it's all about how much you want it. And that's what we got to get back to a society. We got too many people talking about what they want and talking about how they want to make things better, and they just wish things wasn't how they were and all that. What you doing to make it better? Boxing is still a form of fighting, and people still get hurt. You know, the greater of the lesser evils at the end of the day. So that's the one thing that really kind of turned people off. Because a lot of times when I'm, you know, having a discussion with parents, and I try to explain that to them, like, I'm not teaching your son how to be a bully. I'm not teaching your son how to go out here and beat people up. Like, don't have that misconception, like, just because your son come to my boxing program that he's automatically going to start going out here beating little kids up, taking their lunch money. And like, it don't work like that. If anything, your son would kind of be like a hero, because he would be deterring guys from doing stuff like that, because he'd know that ain't cool and that ain't how you should treat people. You know, so boxing has always been glorified, but, you know, villainized at the same time, just to what it's a bloody sport, you know, and nobody wants to see their child beat up. It's just like football. You know, we all love the violence. We love to see two giant men run full speed and collide together. What we don't like is the aftermath, is when one of them grown men say that they can't walk or speak properly because of the collision, or they can't remember who they are, because we don't like that part of it. And because, like I say, so many other stigmas that come with boxing, it kind of gave it a bad name. But when you truly sit back and look at it, this is the purest way from the beginning of time for people to settle their differences. From the Romans to the Africans to the Chinese, like everybody, like they had a whole gladiator movie and series, like, that was, like, really, to this day, glorified. I mean, glorified, like, because that showed the macho in man. It showed who was the true top dog, or whatever you want to call it. And that's what society is about, who's on top.
You're obviously teaching athletic skills here, but you're also teaching a culture. You're teaching a discipline. There's a lot of personal mentoring, I imagine, happening here all the time. Talk about some of those more personal conversations that sort of are maybe not are sort of the extra kinds of mentoring that you can do when you're in this sort of a situation.
I mean, honestly, man, it's almost like being a surrogate dad. You really don't know what to expect. The young kid that was sitting in the chair, Uki in the back, he just lost his brother, not to death or anything, but he was, you know, put in a foster home. So that has a tremendous effect on him, because him and his brother was best friends. And his brother was like his father, did everything for him, for real. So, and that was kind of like a personal decision. So that's something that's being worked out. But I say, a lot of times, you really realize that you truly became these kids, you know, like I say, like surrogate dad, or almost, you know, father figure for real. A lot of times I done had kids, and I'm not saying it's like tooting my horn, but I done had kids say that they wish I was their dad and stuff like that. And it kind of like hurt for real, you know, because you shouldn't have to turn to a stranger for that affection, you know. So the fact that they do have to turn to me, you know, I'm honored and glad that I could be there, but it be kind of like a slap in the face for real, you know, because you shouldn't have to know what that's like to, you know, wish somebody else was your parent or could decide to take care of you and things like. So that's why I say, like, at the end of the day, we truly have to start making ways for our kids and start eliminating and taking away from them. Like, we got to give these kids hope and inspiration.
You never know who's going to be listening to a radio show. But, there may be folks listening to this program who, you know, make budget decisions in the city and have some political power. What do you want to say to the people in power in the city about the importance of prioritizing recreational programs for kids in Baltimore?
If I could just speak bluntly, take into the consideration that you take in for your kids. That same passion, energy, and drive that you put forth to ensure that your kids' schools have ACs and the best fields and the best teachers, put that same fight towards Baltimore City, because it's all for the betterment of us all. You know, we really want to see, as the president said, make America great again. Well, this is what we got to do to make America great. Make everybody great. Stop this pettiness of, oh, I'm better than you because I live here. Or, oh, I'm better than you because I make this. Like, we truly got to give everybody the opportunity to be the same. And then whatever comes from it, like when you look at countries overseas, they go to college for free. And America's supposed to be so great. You know, so we truly want to be great as a whole, as a society. We have to wholeheartedly, everybody, put forth the same commitment and energy in everything, not just in the things that benefit you and your people.
I wonder if you might talk about, I'll give you a chance to talk about your sister, who she was, what she meant to you, and what happened.
Ashley Danielle Long, she was the life of the party, man. Anybody and everybody that knew her, they'd tell you, man, like, that's all she did was party. Like, any picture you see of her, she's nonstop smiling, always happy, always energetic. And she was never with, you know, the foolishness. She was always the type that say, make your money, stop beefing. You should be, like, she was all about just vibing out, you know. So that's a huge, huge loss that me and my family suffered. And it's one that I'm really, you know, still trying to adapt and adjust to.
An experience like that has got to be tough to wrap your mind around and integrate into the fact that you're doing all this work all the time to prevent violence. I mean, did that, what was it like to try to work through that and try to be sort of battling the tide of violence at the same time? I mean, that it's got to be professionally discouraging too.
If it wasn't for the kids, like the kids that was just in this office, my kids, my sister kids, there's no telling what I would have done.
Alex Long, community activist, Safe Streets Violence Intervention Officer, and founder and president of Team Redemption Boxing Gym in East Baltimore. I'm Aaron Hinken. You're tuned to Life in the Balance. Alex went on to tell us that his sister was murdered in the street by someone she knew. They got into an argument and nobody intervened. He describes his anger when he saw her body lying in the street. At that moment, one of the kids in the neighborhood, someone who knew his sister and Alex's family well, walked toward him with a butcher knife, yelling about revenge. It was at that moment that he felt all his anger melt away. He had to talk this kid out of pursuing violence, and he'd be hypocritical to tell him to put the knife down while he was still hatching revenge plans of his own. He knew he couldn't continue a cycle of violence when he had kids who relied on him. Alex is renaming the gym Team Redemption Ashley's Garden in his sister's honor. We're going to take a short break now, but when we come back, we'll be talking with a clinical psychologist about the adolescent mind and just how important sports and meaningful group activities are at such an impactful age. We're going to try to understand the science behind Alex's program and why it's working so well. Life in the Balance comes back in just a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back to Life in the Balance. I'm Aaron Henkin. On today's program, we've been hearing the story of Alex Long and the work that he's doing in East Baltimore. He's created an after-school boxing gym for the local kids, filling a void for meaningful extracurricular athletics for kids in the area. We heard from Alex and from his students about how important this work is and the impact it's had on their lives. And now we're going to take a few minutes, zoom out, and try to get a more theoretical understanding about the value of sports in terms of structure and ritual for adolescents. Here to help us with that understanding is John Donahue. He's a licensed clinical psychologist and an assistant professor at the University of Baltimore. He focuses on the nature and treatment of anxiety, anger, and aggression, and he's worked with many young adults involved in the criminal justice system. John Donahue, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me about your work as a clinical psychologist. What sort of work do you do with patients?
Sure. So as you noted, primarily I'm an assistant professor of psychology at the University of Baltimore. There I teach in both the undergraduate and graduate programs in psychology. And my research emphasis is on emotion regulation, particularly how the ways in which we attempt to modify or change our emotions can be either adaptive or maladaptive, and how that might play out in psychological disorders. Clinically, my clinical interests are very much related to those research interests and that work around emotion regulation. As a graduate student, I worked with a number of court-mandated probationers in the city of Philadelphia on the treatment of anger. I also worked in the VA system in both Philadelphia and Portland, Oregon, where I worked in PTSD outpatient clinics. And I also worked in the federal prison system in one of their medical centers up in Devon. So it's essentially a hospital within a prison where I did work with incarcerated offenders who are experiencing psychiatric illness.
With that experience and that focus in mind, John, we've heard a bit about Alex's boxing program and the impact it's having on kids in the neighborhood. Most of the kids in that gym are between like 8 and 13 years old. Talk a bit about maybe that age range and why it's important for kids this age to be involved in some kind of organized physical activity.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. You know, interestingly, historically, if you go back to the early days of the field of psychology, and Sigmund Freud would talk about adolescent development, he would often speak about this period as being a time in which there wasn't a whole lot of development going on, that it actually all kind of happened in the early years, and this was really a time to just practice and refine your skills. And over time, research in child development has shown us that that's actually quite false. This is a period in which there's marked growth and development going on, as you might know. And this happens in a range of areas. So cognitively, kids are developing complex problem-solving skills. They're developing moral reasoning abilities. In terms of emotional development, this is a time where emotion regulation abilities are being promoted, or in some instances not promoted, unfortunately. In interpersonal development, this is a time where you are kind of becoming more autonomous. Your network of peers greatly grows through going to school and expanding out into the neighborhood, and you're influenced not just by your parents or your caretakers, but you're influenced by a much larger range of people. And that way, you can learn to cooperate, how to negotiate demands in a society or in a group, and really practice those interpersonal skills.
So considering all of the developmental processes that are happening in this age range, organized activities, extracurricular activities, athletic activities are a huge plus for kids to be able to get involved in. I wonder if, in your experience, you've got thoughts about how cities prioritize those options for children. What kind of recreational and organized activities are available, and are there enough out there?
So I think one unfortunate thing that tends to occur, and I'm speaking to this as, you know, as a parent, as a member of the community, oftentimes when budgets are being crunched and particular programs are being prioritized, community activities, extracurricular activities can sometimes be given the short end of the stick. And these can be programs that get cut so as to prioritize other resources or other programs that are deemed to be more important. I think while I understand the rationale and the very kind of the need to prioritize certain programs, I think this can be incredibly short-sighted because of the potential long-term benefits of programs like this can provide for kids as they grow up.
You know, it's interesting. Something Alex Long does at the gym is he has all the boys get in a circle before their actual physical workout begins, and he has them just talk about their day, reflect on it, whether it was good or bad, what they would change, and so on. I wonder if you might talk about how sports, organized athletics might help provide social spaces for sharing.
Yeah, so this really sounds like a wonderful element of the program. And I can't speak to it directly without having more information about how exactly it's structured. But if you'll allow me to speculate about what could be going on, I can certainly do that. And one thing that might be happening in a program like this is that as you're working with your peers, as you're training with your peers, you're developing trust in them. You're developing the ability to cooperate and engage in this pro-social behavior towards a larger goal. And as you develop that trust, that creates a safe space. Right. So in that safe space, there's more of a willingness to share some of those more personal details of what's going on in your life, at home, at school, elsewhere. And then you take that safe space and you translate it to the circle where these kids are actually asked to talk about what's going on in their day. And they're really given the opportunity to kind of develop those socio-emotional skills in that circle as they think about what they're feeling, why they're feeling that way, how they responded to their thoughts and emotions, what worked, what didn't work, in this non-judgmental atmosphere where they're not feeling like they're going to be criticized or told that they're weak if they start talking about their emotions.
They're doing this in front of each other, their peers, and then they're also doing this under the wing of mentors who really, I think, in a lot of cases, come to fill in a really important void in a lot of kids' lives.
Yeah.
Coaches, I think we heard Alex say he's like a surrogate dad to a lot of these kids. You're tuned to Life and the Balance. We're talking with John Donahue. He's a clinical psychologist and assistant professor at the University of Baltimore. And John, tell me about a little bit more about your work, some of the inmates and young adults involved in the criminal justice system that you've worked with. Are there some common threads that you've seen, common experiences that have shaped their lives in their developmental years?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that immediately jumps out is marginalization. Now, there are many roads that lead to Rome, and it's not just going to be one or two things that lead someone down a path towards the criminal justice system or antisocial behavior. It's typically going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of causal factors. But marginalization really jumps out because once we push someone to the margins, and that can come through a number of ways, that can be through childhood abuse or neglect. That can be through being bullied. That can come from becoming the bully. But once kids start to feel marginalized, that starts to push them down a path of less cooperation, less empathy, less pro-social behavior, and that will can ultimately bring them in contact with the criminal justice system and increase their risk for mental health problems later on.
I guess sports have always been a sort of ritualized combat, mm-hmm. like all throughout history, pressure release valve for aggression. Any thoughts on that historically? I mean, I guess it was interesting to hear Alex and some of his kids talking about, you know, being able to solve a problem with your hands versus, you know, a gun.
Yeah.
So I guess everything is relative.
Yeah, it exactly. And you hear that more and more with the kind of the influx of guns in society, that, you know, disputes that may have been settled with your fists in the past. Now that there's a gun involved, it really changes the gravity of the situation. As far as kind of as a way to express kind of pent up emotions and the ritualistic nature of it, you know, one thing I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, might be this kind of catharsis belief of emotions and aggressive behavior. And we used to think of aggression as a cathartic experience, right? If you get it out, then you're effectively expressing that emotion, and that allows you to kind of move forward from it and process it. Some of the research has gone against that cathartic hypothesis, again, suggesting that aggression in response to emotions serves to reinforce that aggressive response, so it becomes more likely later on. So again, I think it goes back to how it is taught. If these skills are taught as a way to respond to your emotions, then I think that could be problematic. But if they're taught as a way to train your mind, way to train your body, way to invoke discipline, then I think that can be quite valuable for a person. But the notion of emotions as being kind of held in and bottled up and needing to be released has really been supplanted in recent years by the notion of emotions as experiences that come and go like waves. And we may not necessarily need to cathartically release them, but we do need to respond to them effectively.
You mentioned the word discipline. And that's a word that we heard over and over again from Alex Long. And as I think about the experience that we shared hanging out with him, and I think about the work that you do, I think maybe you and Alex Long aren't too far apart in terms of your goals. He uses the word discipline a lot. Yeah. And I guess... what he's trying to accomplish is to use this organized athletic activity as a way to instill self-discipline in the students he's working with. And it sounds like that's, in a great part, your goal as a clinical psychologist. Any thoughts on the importance of discipline as we get ready to wrap up?
Yeah. So if I could, I'd like to speak to this notion, which is related to discipline, this notion of psychological flexibility. And when I work with clients in psychotherapy, my orientation is something called acceptance and commitment therapy. And this is a psychological treatment that is an evidence-based treatment for a variety of problem areas. And the goal here is to promote something called psychological flexibility. And that refers to our willingness or our ability to remain in contact with our moment-to-moment experience and shift our behavior or persist in behavior that's in the service of our long-term goals and values. And it's thought to be comprised of really three areas. So an openness to an experience. Can I tolerate difficult emotions and thoughts without trying to make them go away? An ability to be aware and present in my current environment versus running on automatic pilot. And then the third is my ability to be engaged in the things that are important to me, engaging in value-driven behavior. And I see this in a program like you described, or like Alex's program, in which boxing can help kids learn how to tolerate those difficult experiences. Be present, focusing on the here and now as opposed to what happened this morning or what's going on later this afternoon. And all of this is in the service of something larger than you, some goal that is important to you or some value that is important to you. So I think in promoting this discipline, this is kind of one aspect of this larger concept of psychological flexibility, which is a road to well-being.
I can hear your conflictedness as you talk about this idea of boxing as therapeutic activity, if you will. And I guess part of it is you need to meet kids where they are and present them with something that is engaging enough to keep them coming back so that the discipline, the mentorship, the other good benefits that go along with an organized activity can happen. Yeah. Even if it's, you know, a more aggressive sport.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And you know, rarely is something either good or bad, though the context makes it so. And I think this is a case where this type of program can be incredibly valuable in that it promotes self-control, it promotes a more healthy mind and body, and it may promote psychological flexibility. I think we need to monitor the safety element and make sure that it's done in the safest way possible, and then also just think about the ways in which it was taught.
You know, another very obvious idea here that maybe you could give some perspective to, John, is the idea that when you're physically active and physically healthy, that puts you one more step closer to being mentally healthy. There are certain root physiological benefits, right, to these activities, as well as all the social benefits that come along with them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and there are two things here. So first, just the basic physical benefit, right? This is a period in time in which children are recommended to be getting at least 1 hour a day of strenuous physical exercise. So a program like this allows a child to be getting that exercise that is important for both their body and mind. Now, psychologically, physical exercise has tremendous benefits. We sometimes refer to exercise as being nature's antidepressant. In fact, it's really interesting. If you look at studies on clinical depression, for mild levels of depression, 8 weeks of exercise has the exact same benefit as 8 weeks of psychotherapy or 8 weeks of an antidepressant. So in that case, sometimes the best prescription is exercise. And in fact, when I work with clients and we are looking to improve overall emotion regulation skills, one of the things we talk about is how to integrate exercise into their day. Because as we do it, we become less susceptible to those difficult thoughts and emotions and our tendency to respond ineffectively to them.
John Donahue is a clinical psychologist and assistant professor at the University of Baltimore. And John, thank you very much for your perspective. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Life in the Balance is edited and produced by Katie Marquette. The program airs here on WYPR at 1 p.m. and again at 9 p.m. on the first Wednesday of the month. You can hear this episode along with older episodes at wypr.org/lifeinthebalance. For 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station, I'm Aaron Hinken. Thanks for listening.